Today's show is brought to you by Underbrush, a new thriller by Kevin Carr. There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, Couch Potatoes, across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Today's show, we're going to be talking about some new movies. We've got Mordecai, we've got Strange Magic, we've got The Boy Next Door, Cake. I love Cake. Not the movie, I just like Cake. One of the fat guys at the movies, after all. And Pioneer. We're also going to be talking a little bit about American Sniper, even though we covered a lot of it last week. There's a backlash, and it's a huge backlash in Hollywood. I don't think it really means anything. But we've got some people sticking their feet in their mouths, people like Michael Moore and Seth Rogen. We're going to talk about that, American Sniper, and the more left-leaning response to the movie, especially after the historic opening weekend it had. We're going to be talking about the trailer park. We're going to be talking about box office predictions and the world-famous DVD roundup. First, if you want to get a hold of me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. If you want to reach out to me on Twitter, you can reach me at twitter.com/kevincarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
All right, let's just kick off right now, go right into the news. This is something I've been itching to talk about ever since, not just the Oscar nominations, because that came out before last week, but then when American Sniper did an unprecedented record-breaking weekend last week, people wigged out. And by people, I mean people who don't necessarily agree with the politics that are not even on display, but just sort of surrounding American Sniper. The first thing is you suddenly had people coming out and speaking out against the movie and saying some really dumb things. And the probably the most infuriating thing that you saw was Michael Moore. Big surprise. Michael Moore did not like this movie. Michael Moore came out and said that this movie glorified snipers, and because his uncle was killed by a sniper in World War II, a Japanese sniper in World War II, he has always been taught that snipers are cowards. And he claims that Chris Kyle was a coward, and by being a sniper, that made him a coward. And I've heard people defend him, saying, well, he's talking about somebody like James Earl Ray, who shot Martin Luther King. Well, okay. I mean, if you want to go strictly by the definition of sniper as somebody who sits in a hidden position and shoots somebody, well, yeah, sure. But there's a huge difference between what James Earl Ray did shooting Martin Luther King and a person in the military assigned to do that in a specific military action with defined rules of engagement, shooting people who are going to do harm to your troops. That's the purpose of a sniper. And to call a sniper a coward, you know, because they're shooting from afar and from a distance and not going face to face in a battle, you might as well call bombardiers cowards or somebody sitting behind in the bridge of an aircraft carrier way, way, way off from, safely away from combat. They're doing a job. That is what the military does. Now, the other thing that came out is Seth Rogen stuck his foot in his mouth when he tweeted basically saying to the effect that he thought that the American Sniper reminded him of that Nazi film that was at the end of Inglourious Basterds, ultimately calling it propaganda. Invoking the word Nazi or anything associated with Nazi is the go-to position for people who want to stick it to anything that leans maybe a little bit right of center. You're a Nazi, or it's propaganda. Well, here's the thing. First of all, let's look at what propaganda. I mean, which is funny coming from Seth Rogen, who his film, The Interview, which caused all these problems a month ago, is ultimately as much propaganda as American Sniper is. I mean, if you really look at the raw definition of propaganda, propaganda is just basically anything that has a specific viewpoint that presents that viewpoint and tries to persuade the audience, which means any issue-driven movie could be considered propaganda. And any documentary, I mean, you want to talk Michael Moore, everything he does is propaganda, if you by that definition. But it's not what they're talking about there. They're talking about propaganda films. They want to make it like the Nazis. This is what the Nazis did. They made these movies. The Nazis did something very different. The Nazis took over the film industry and started making movies, funding them and making movies specifically about something that they're trying to say, and they control it. That's the insidiousness of propaganda. And that is not what's going on here. Not even close. And it's not even that Hollywood hasn't engaged in that. We got Donald Duck propaganda films from the 40s. And I've seen these movies. Invisible Agent. I just watched all the Invisible Man movies. There's a movie called Invisible Agent, which is very much a propaganda movie about the Invisible Man going behind the lines and going after the Nazis. I mean, these things did happen, and they did happen in collusion. This is not what happened with American Sniper. This was an independent business, Warner Brothers, and it's directed by Clint Eastwood. And it's not like the U.S. government called up Clint Eastwood and said, hey, can you make this movie and make the snipers look really good? No, it's not propaganda. It is propaganda in the sense that anything trying to persuade somebody from a point of view is propaganda. But then again, Selma's propaganda by that definition. And the interview's propaganda by that definition. And everything that Michael Moore's ever made is propaganda. It's not government-funded propaganda, but if you're going by the strict persuasive film argument, then it is. People are wigging out over this movie because they're so upset that it did so well and unprecedentedly well. I've read articles where people are like, oh, well, now it's all this backlash is causing, it's going to cause problems. It's not going to win the Oscars. Well, this movie was never going to win the Oscars. If it doesn't win Best Picture, that's not because of some backlash. That's because it had enough votes to get nominated, but it's up against 7 other movies and it wasn't nominated for Best Director, which usually torpedoes its chance at the Oscars. It's just not going to happen. But it's not going to happen because there's any sort of victory on Hollywood's backlash. It's just that this movie wasn't going to win the Oscars anyways. Most of the arguments against American Sniper seem to fall in 3 categories. The first one is they just don't agree with the politics of the film. And that's just tough beans. Too bad. It's about politics and it's about point of view and it's about opinion. And you can't suddenly say, well, your opinion's wrong, because everybody has an opinion. And apparently a lot of people in the United States like this movie as well and have this opinion. The second thing is it's maybe not telling the story that they wanted to tell. They want this movie to be about questioning the war in Iraq and questioning President Bush and questioning Cheney's involvement. And were we there for a purpose? And should we have been there? And well, these things are left out. He lied about Jesse Ventura and all these things that are not covered in the movie. That's not what the movie's about, but for whatever reason, that's the reason they hate it. But the third big reason why I see people going after this movie, plain and simple, they just don't understand how the military works. And I'm always reticent to say that about something. Oh, you just don't get it. But I think a lot of people just don't get it. A sniper's job is not to question every single thing he's... A sniper's job is to sit there and he's told, shoot people who are going after the troops, and that's what you do. The job of a soldier or a SEAL in battle is to go in there and do within your defined rules of engagement to achieve your mission. You're not to question the orders. You can't question the orders. If you have a military that's questioning the orders on every little thing and then saying, well, man, should we do this? I don't know. What are these people? Was the president right in doing this? If you do that as the military just won't function. And you can disagree with the policy, but that's not what this movie's about. You've had plenty of movies about whether this was the right war and were we doing the right things and is this the right way to do it and what about the people coming home? You've had plenty of those movies. They tend not to do well, but you've had them. So when a movie come like this comes out and it's not telling the story you want and it's not the way you think the military should be, even though you're in your ivory tower back home, there's not a whole lot you can do. Just deal with it. Chalk it up with the fact that some people like this movie. I hate Boyhood. I think Boyhood's a crap movie. Yet it's getting accolades and it might win the Oscar. I'm not going to start a very loud whisper campaign to shut that movie down. All right, that's about it on news. I need to move on. You hear that sound, and that means it's time to move on into the trailer park. The first film I want to talk about is The Gunman, starring Sean Penn, and it's directed by the guy who did Taken.
You keep a diary of the horror we created.
It never happened.
That's the way you want to play it?
With me?
You did your part, I did mine. We all found a way to justify it.
I recorded everything. I'm going to throw it out where the world can see it.
Really? Really?
Jim, we have a surprise for you.
She's a remarkable woman, Jim.
Now, this one, of course, tries to make Sean Penn this butt-kicking action hero the way they took Liam Neeson and made him into a huge action hero with Taken. I don't know if this is going to work. Sean Penn, even though he's glowering throughout the trailer, he's just not an action hero. Sean Penn rarely is likable in movies, and I don't know if it's going to work here. I mean, I'm sure it might have fine action, but I think Sean Penn's going to be what holds us up. Anyways, this opens on March 20th. With that, I need to go to a break. Next, I'm going to be talking about Strange Magic and Cake. Not the food, the film. There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kuykendall Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies coming back at you. Before I get into the other movies, I want to talk just one more thing about American Sniper. And I apologize because I've been talking a lot about it, but I really love the movie. And it was my favorite film of 2014. I don't have a problem if you don't like a movie. I mean, if you and I disagree, I don't care. They're movies. Everybody has an opinion, and it's okay to like something or dislike something. And you know what? The people I respect on it are the ones who they just think it's boring. Or they say, you know what, this, the politics are not mine. But to declare that it's wrong because you disagree with somebody's opinion is just dumb. And the insanity that is fueling this of people just going, this is such a bad movie, why do you like it? We need to stop it from winning the Oscar. I mean, my God, calm down. But if you just thought it was boring, fine. There's a lot of movies that I think are really boring. Like Boyhood. I think Boyhood's a boring movie. I'm not out there trying to debunk it or anything. All right, let's move on and talk about the movies that are opening this week. The first one I want to hit is Strange Magic. Two factions of magical woodland creatures battle for control of a magical love potion.
I'm going to destroy you.
No need to worry. I will protect the kingdom.
My hair's doing that thing we both love.
Whoa!
Nobody ever goes into the dark forest.
I'm not afraid of them.
That's right.
An army approaches.
Sound the alarm.
The potion's dangerous.
It destroys order.
I want it!
You should see your face.
If you recall back when Disney purchased Lucasfilm for $186 billion, they got the Star Wars franchise, which is great because that's what everybody wanted. That was so they could make new Star Wars movies and do it in the right way. And they also were working on Indiana Jones stuff as well, trying to work with Paramount to get that thing off the ground again. Along with Star Wars and the Indiana Jones properties, the other thing that Disney got were all the other projects that George Lucas was working on at Lucasfilm. Because George Lucas is out there like Scrooge McDuck diving in his piles of cash and coins in his vault right now. He's not bothering with this stuff. This was one of those ideas that George Lucas had, and you know what? If it's not Star Wars or Indiana Jones, traditionally, it's not very good. I mean, there is a minefield of bad movies out there post-Star Wars. I mean, you have stuff like Labyrinth, which was okay, but it was goofy. But then you have stuff like Howard the Duck and Willow, which was kind of eh. And Radioland Murders, and just pretty much, if it's got George Lucas's name on it, and it's not Star Wars, it's usually not that good. And you know what? Strange Magic does nothing to dispel that theory. Strange Magic is a jukebox musical, really, where it takes a whole bunch of songs that exist and kind of cram them into this movie. And they spend so much time singing these songs that it often has the plot suffer. I mean, in fact, to the point that this thing starts out with this fairy. She's going to marry another fairy. And then she catches him cheating on her wedding day. And then, like, the next day, she's like a warrior woman. And they're saying, oh, way back before this nonsense. I'm like, wait, did I just have a seizure or something and miss like 10 minutes of the movie? Because it seems like time has passed and there's been no indication that time has passed. And it's got the corniest, silliest, dumbest hook where evil goblin fairies don't like love. And so the plants that can make the love potion they've destroyed, and they do that every year. And then There's a kidnapping involved. This is the most convoluted plot for kids. And it doesn't need to be. In fact, it feels really like a ripoff of the movie Epic. Not a whole lot of people remember that movie. It was a neat movie. Epic was a fantastic film about Amanda Seyfried played this human girl who gets shrunken down to pixie size, and she deals with these pixies in the forest, and they're fighting a bad guy that looks exactly like the bad guy in this movie. Only that one was played by Christoph Waltz, and this one's played by Alan Cumming. I mean, the amount of connective tissue between these movies is alarming. Epic's a far, far better movie. If you have a chance, don't go see Strange Magic. Rent Epic with your kids and watch it this weekend, because Epic's a neat movie. It's beautifully animated. This one's not. This one has some neat animation, but then there's some real uncanny valley stuff going on in this movie, and it just looks like... remember that movie, nobody does, but about like 7 years ago, Delgo? That set a record for the lowest grossing movie of its wide of a release. That's what it reminds me of. It looks like this was made for TV. And there's a reason why Disney released this, to get this out of the slate, to maybe get back some money for it that George Lucas had worked on before he dumped it into Disney's trunk. And now they had to release it, and they didn't do any press screenings. And this is not a good movie. Not even really worth taking the kids to. It's maybe watching it with them on a Saturday afternoon. It's definitely not worth the $20 it's going to take you to take a couple kids to the matinee. Anyway, Strange Magic sucks.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys in the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about cake. Yes, yes, I know. I would much rather be talking about real cake. Although I'm not a big cake fan. I prefer pies. That is sort of like, there's that line in Pulp Fiction, and it's a common saying, there's either Elvis fans or Beatles fans. You're either like cake or pie. I like pie. I like lemon meringue pie. I like cherry pie. I like apple pie. I like a good shoe fly pie, pumpkin pie, sweet potato pie. I mean, pretty much if it's a pie, I'm going to at least give it a shot. I even like stuff like pot pies, like shepherd's pie and like a beef stew pie or a chicken pot pie. I love that stuff. But this is cake, and it's not even real cake. I mean, there's a reason it's called cake, but you have to watch the movie to get it. Anyways, let's talk about this film really quickly. Jennifer Aniston stars as a woman suffering from chronic pain after an accident that claimed the life of her young son.
How's it going?
I'm doing really well.
I want you to verbalize to Nina how her suicide affected you.
She jumped off the freeway overpass, landed on a flatbed truck heading to Mexico. Her body got stuck in customs for like a week before Nina's husband could even claim it. Way to go, Nina.
Listen, you think I could come by and pick up the rest of my stuff? I think it's prudent if we don't see each other.
This movie was touted as the potential Oscar bid for Jennifer Aniston, and I had a chance to see it like a month ago for consideration in the Critics' Choice Movie Awards. And everyone was saying, this is the one that she's going to get nominated for an Oscar. No, she didn't. My back goes up whenever there's a movie that's like, you know what, let's just take this actor and let's make a movie that has no purpose other than getting this person an Academy Award nomination. That didn't work because she's not nominated. But it's not that good of a movie. I mean, she does a fine job, I guess. I mean, I'm not a huge Jennifer Aniston fan, and I don't think she's a bad actress. I just don't think she's the massive dramatic actor that I think she likes to think she is. So, I mean, she got nominated for a Golden Globe. She got nominated for Critics' Choice, which I didn't nominate her, but she did. But that's it. This has been a bit of a dud for her. This lost steam quickly. And the reason is because it is just her walking around acting like she's in pain the whole time and then having a couple yelling scenes. I mean, I know this is like a big deal for actresses and actors to get into the emotion of the role, but it just feels so trite and it just feels so used. And we've been through this before. So if you like this kind of movie, if you like the Oscar bait movie, you'll probably enjoy this one. But it's other than that, it's just... not a whole lot of special going on in this film. So I'm going to have to say cake kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay.
With that, I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the comedies of this week, Mordecai and The Boy Next Door.
I'm too sexy for my shirt.
Kevin Carr coming back with Fat Guys at the Movies. Let's talk comedies now. One of them intentional comedy, the other one not so intentional comedy. Guess which one's funnier? Let's kick it off with Mordecai. A bumbling art detective tries to recover a stolen painting for the British government.
3 months ago, a Spanish museum sent a Goya painting to be cleaned. The painting has disappeared. It's a very bad man who wanted to fund violent worldwide revolution. Countless lives are at stake.
And you would like me to find it?
Precisely.
We need a fiendishly clever plan to secure our reward.
We grab the painting when no one's looking.
Ingenious.
I get what they're trying to do with this movie. We've seen these kind of films before where you've got this bumbling detective. I mean, this is Inspector Clouseau all over again. And don't get me wrong, I think Inspector Clouseau is hilarious. Not in every film. There have been some duds in the Pink Panther series. But, I mean, you got the funny accent, weird way of talking, complete idiot with a henchman who's way cooler than him. That's the Inspector Clouseau. I mean, you got Inspector Clouseau, you've got K2, and they can't do Inspector Clouseau. So this is David Koepp's version of doing Inspector Clouseau. Now, David Koepp is best known for being a screenwriter, and he's a fantastic screenwriter. He wrote stuff like Jurassic Park. And I mean, he's sort of like, you know, Robert Orsi. He was Robert Orsi before even Robert Orsi was around. But his directing efforts have been mediocre to terrible at times. I mean, he did Premium Rush a couple years ago. That's with Joseph Gordon-Levitt as the bike messenger, which was an okay movie. And then he's done other terrible movies like Secret Window, which is a terrible film based on a terrible Stephen King book. And Mordecai tries really hard to be funny. And at times it works. Actually, I found myself laughing. And if it wasn't such a dud of a movie, there would have been more laughs. And maybe there's like 20 minutes of laughs in this movie, but it's stretched out over an hour and 40 some minutes. Part of it is also everyone has this fake British accent in the movie. I mean, obviously you had Ewan McGregor, well, who's Scottish, but he's doing his British accent. And you've got like Paul Bettany, who's also British. But you've got Johnny Depp, who's not British. And you also have Gwyneth Paltrow, who's not British, even though she thinks she is. And so everyone talks very thick posh, like this is a hell movie. And maybe I should review this movie with my fake posh British accent. It doesn't work. It's like a basketball that hasn't been inflated. It's like those, what is it, the footballs? The championship game footballs, Deflategate? That's what this movie is. It's just like, ah, here we go. And there are jokes that they will repeat. Now, there's a theory in comedy that you can take something that's funny once and repeat it enough, it's not funny. But if you keep repeating it incessantly, it will become funny again and eventually funnier than it originally was. And I've seen that in comedies, and that works sometimes. The problem is the jokes that they decide to repeat really aren't funny for the first time. They have to be really funny. They spend more time talking about his mustache than what is ever needed. And part of it is to just draw attention to it. I mean, there's literally like three or four scenes in the beginning where they spend an entire scene talking about his mustache with different people. Oh, look, I have this beautiful mustache that I did. I love it. It's wonderful. Those aren't funny when they start. And so by repeating them, they just don't get any funnier. They just get dumb. And there's a couple very clever things that happen in the movie, but it's just filled with gaps of nothingness. It's trying to be Inspector Clouseau. It's trying to be Johnny English. And it's Johnny Depp doing something really quirky and bizarre. And it's amazing because it's got such a fantastic cast. And it looks beautiful. It's got Johnny Depp, Gwyneth Paltrow, Ewan McGregor. It's got Paul Bettany. Jeff Goldblum shows up in it. Olivia Munn's in it. I mean, they've got names and they got people behind the movie, but the film itself is just kind of So I guess that's my review. It's not getting good reviews. It's really not worth seeing. I guess this is one of those movies that if you swerve into it on a Saturday afternoon on HBO and you're not doing anything else, you can watch it and be like, yeah, it was okay. But I wouldn't pay $10 to go see this, even though I did, because they didn't have press screenings. So yeah, Mordecai kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay.
You're listening to Fat Guys of the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about The Boy Next Door. Ooh, this is the one to talk about this week. Jennifer Lopez stars as a teacher who sleeps with a neighbor who then becomes one of her students and also becomes violently obsessed with her.
Principal Warren.
Good news. I've approved your request for Noah Sanborn to join your class.
Kevin, did you send an email from my account?
Sounds like you've been hacked.
You should really change your password.
Your father seems to be around a lot now, huh?
Yeah, I guess.
Don't forget that he walked out on you.
Honey, I need you to stay away from Noah, okay?
See you at school.
Do you want to take a cookie for the road?
I love your mother's cookies.
Much like Mordecai, we've seen these kind of movies before. I mean, going back to Fatal Attraction, and you had Single White Female, and you had The Crush, and then you had The Roommate a couple years ago. This is not treading new ground. In a way, it kind of reminds me a little bit of The Stepfather, the remake of The Stepfather. At least it's R-rated, so it has some edgier stuff in this movie. Or The Stepfather, I believe that was a PG-13 remake. It goes through the motions that you would expect a movie like this to go through. And when it's just that movie, it's kind of lame. But when the movie becomes absurd on its own right is when it becomes brilliant. I remember a couple years ago, this movie called Gone came out and starred Amanda Seyfried as this girl who was thinking that people were after her and her sister got kidnapped and she was trying to track down the real killer. That movie was absurdly terrible. And it was over the top done. I actually thought that movie was brilliant because I think it was a joke pulled on everybody that the movie was terrible. And they made it deliberately terrible to the point of hilarity. This one kind of fits that mold, only I really don't think it was meant to be ridiculously bad. I had heard that the star went on like the Today Show and said, oh, no, there's going to be things you laugh at. I don't know if Rob Cohen was meaning to make this a comedy from its beginning. The first half hour of this film is a laugh a minute. It is so ridiculously bad. The dialogue is achingly bad, ridiculous at times. And it's not like intentionally funny. It's just things that they say and how they say it. And then they have just things happen. And there's a scene in there where she plays an English teacher. And of course, the guy, she's Noah, who's obsessed with her. She's like going to teach the Iliad to her class. And she says that to her class. She's like, this year we're going to study the Iliad. And I'm like, really? The whole year? The entire year you're studying the Iliad? I know it's a long poem, but usually you move on to other subjects in high school. So he brings her a book. He's like, oh, I got this for you. He's like, and it's a book of, it's the Iliad. And she looks, it's a book. She's like, this is a first edition. I can't take this. I'm like, what, did Jesus print this thing? Homer wrote this thing in what, the 8th century BC? I mean, what was he didn't like show up with papyrus scrolls or anything like that. She's talking about, oh, this is a first edition. This isn't like somebody getting the first edition of, I don't know, Gone with the Wind. No, the Iliad is a epic poem that I don't think there exists the first edition of it anymore. It's so ridiculous. There's a scene in there. There's a whole part in there where her friend, who's played by Kristen Chenoweth, who's an assistant principal at the film, that you find out she lives on this ranch. And I'm like, why does an assistant principal live on a ranch? And they go in the barn and there's a tractor. I'm like, what does she do with a tractor? I mean, I can understand maybe she was divorced and she got the house and the land. But I mean, it's a working barn with like hay and tractors and tools and chains and pulleys and stuff in there. I mean, like, what is she doing on the weekend? There's a level of absurdity in this film. It reminds me of, if you remember the film Drag Me to Hell, which was a Sam Raimi movie, oh gosh, 5 or 6 years ago. And that one had ridiculous, absurd, Looney Tunes kind of moments. But it was very clear that that's what Sam Raimi was going for. And then there's just logical problems in the film. He's like almost 20, and she's like, well, you're a kid. I'm like, well, no, you're not going to get in trouble sleeping with somebody who's 20. And yeah, he eventually becomes your student, but you did it over the summer, and that's not like you're not your student at the time, and he's almost 20. And there's a scene where he like beats down this kid in school, and Kristen Chenoweth's like, you're expelled. Yet somehow he's still in school. He's not with the police because he was in his almost 20. I mean, he was a full-grown adult, and he was beating up this teenage kid. I don't care what place you live in. That's going to warrant a call to the police. This movie is so ridiculous and hilarious. I'm not saying you should go see it, but when it comes out on video, go get a case of beer, a box of wine, some cheap liquor. Watch it with your friends and make fun of this movie because that's what it deserves. It's a hilarious film, though it's not worth $10. So The Boy Next Door, while hilarious at times, sucks.
It sucks.
All right, with that, I need to go to a break. We're going to be talking next about Pioneer, the box office, and the world-famous DVD roundup.
Elizabeth Stokes' new romance novel, Five Nights in Vegas, is about meeting, getting married, and falling in love, in that order. Lexi Frost is a cocktail waitress in a Las Vegas casino. Nate Zimmerman is a marketing executive from back east. After a chance meeting on Nate's business trip, they wake up to discover they got married at an all-night wedding chapel. During their whirlwind attempt to undo their mistake, Lexi and Nate discover they might just be made for each other after all. Five Nights in Vegas by Elizabeth Stokes is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited.
Kevin Carr coming back for a final segment. We've got one more movie to talk about, and then we're going to talk a little bit about box office, and then the DVD roundup. Some great stuff in the DVD roundup this week. But first, let's talk about the last movie on the docket. This is Pioneer. In the 1970s, a Norwegian diver gets caught up in a conspiracy with a company drilling for oil off the coast.
You ready for this?
Yeah. Focus on the job right in front.
And we'll all end up making a lot of money together.
How you feeling, boys?
Never felt better.
Staff medical information is confidential.
Mistakes get made, don't they?
You've got something in mind,
and I want it back.
I was ignorant of this story, which is apparently based on a true story about them finding oil, big, huge oil deposit in the North Sea off of Norway, and then the Americans and the Norwegians worked together to try and find a way to mine it because it was so far down, something like 500 meters or something like that. It was like 1,000 to 1,500 feet, which back in the 70s was a big deal. I mean, nowadays technology has gotten a lot better, and they have submersibles that go down and find the Titanic. But back then, you couldn't just put on a skin diving suit and go down there. I mean, there was massive water pressure. And so they were working on getting the right gas mix and finding a way to do it. And there was an accident that happened. The whole point was, is that access to this oil deposit would make Norway and the people involved extremely wealthy. Not like the Saudis. I mean, it's just Norway, but it's extremely lucrative oil, no matter where it is, you know. I mean, it's great for Jed Clampett. Anyways, this film is part Norwegian. Now, you hear in the trailer it was all English. I took out all the Norwegian because you don't know what they're saying. It's subtitled, obviously, but it's English and Norwegian, and it's more of a Norwegian production. So if you're going to see this, it's going to have subtitles, but it's worth checking out. It's an interesting film. It's a bit of a thriller, but it's just based on a true story type thing and a bit of a detective story. It's not as focused as it could be, but I think a lot of that is because it is based on a true story. It's tough adapting true stories to drama. I always say that life has an incredible sense of drama. It does not always have an incredible sense of timing. And when you have a movie that's based on a true story like this, it can be very interesting and have some great stuff happening, but it just doesn't time out right. It makes the pacing a little bit awkward and weird. But it's well shot. It's well acted. It runs a little bit long at times. I mean, it's almost 2 hours, and it probably could have been a lot shorter. But it's an interesting enough movie. I say if you have a chance to see it and you want to see something a little bit different, want to expand your horizons and, you know, try something new, check it out. Pioneer kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk a little bit about box office. And was I correct? I said American Sniper was going to make $35 million. I lowballed that. I mean, I was way off. I mean, way off. Ridiculously off. American Sniper ended up making, just in the three-day weekend, $89 million. To put that in perspective, that is about what Guardians of the Galaxy and Godzilla last summer. This number, this opening box office, was a summer movie box office. It is the highest grossing opening weekend for an Oscar Best Picture nominee. It's better than the opening weekend of Avatar. Now, Avatar went on to make $700 million. It just kept going. And I'm not going to say that American Sniper is going to make that. It's probably well over $200 million is what the final tally is going to be on this film. I mean, when you take the four-day, it was $107 million. That is unprecedented. It bests the best of a January opening by like almost twice. It's insane how much money this movie made. And I didn't see it coming. I don't know if anybody saw this coming. And people thought it was going to do well, but then suddenly, like, the Thursday nights were sold out and the matinees on Friday were, and I started seeing news of them saying, wow, this made like $35 million. What I said it was going to make the entire week, and it made in one day. Which, like I said, those are good numbers for a big summer movie or a tentpole November, December release. They're almost unheard of for a January release. I mean, good for you, Clint Eastwood. I think this is the biggest movie of his career. And it's not the biggest movie of Bradley Cooper's career because he's in Guardians of the Galaxy. But it's pretty freaking huge. So yeah, American Sniper, unbeatable at this point. The Wedding Ringer was number two. Made little under $21 million for the 3 day and $24 million. And actually, it came in number two for the weekend, and then Paddington came up and beat it for the 4 day, which made over $25 million for the 4 day, whereas Wedding Ringer came in 24. Those are pretty decent numbers for both of them. You'd expect a little bit more from Kevin Hart, but the thing, Kevin Hart didn't have Ice Cube with him on this one. He had Josh Gad, and Josh Gad is not exactly what you call a draw. Black Hat bombed pretty embarrassingly. It made the top 10 if all you do is consider the 3 day weekend. It made just under $4 million for its 3 day. It made just over $4 million for its 4 day weekend. Everything's been thrown off because of how well American Sniper did. And because of that, I'm going to say that American Sniper is obviously going to win this weekend. I really don't think The Boy Next Door is going to give it much problem. I'm saying $40 million for American Sniper. It might even be more than that because it's making something like $7, $8 million each day of this past week. So it's going to be huge still this weekend. It just will crack $45 million. I mean, this thing could be on track to break $200 million by the end of the weekend. Might be going into Monday with $200 million. That's an amazing number. You're listening to Fat Guys in the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the world-famous DVD Roundup. On DVD this week, we've got a couple films that actually, one of them was one of my favorite movies of 2014, and that would be The Box Trolls, which is a totally charming, wonderful, no pun intended, out-of-the-box movie about this village that loves cheese and these trolls that live under the ground in boxes, why they're called box trolls, and the people think that they're stealing children, and they're really not, but it's a big misunderstanding. It's a charming film. It's weirdly grotesque, which is what you'd expect from everything from Laika, which did Coraline and Paranorman, two brilliant movies on their own. These movies never do tremendously well because they're really kind of weird and bizarre. And I don't think they're necessarily the normal things that people digest. But they make enough money to justify it. And there's a certain art to the stop motion animation of these films that go beyond what we saw in Nightmare Before Christmas. Most people think stop motion animation, the most recent thing they can think of is Nightmare Before Christmas, which is over 20 years old. But there have been plenty of other cool stop motion things since. And I love the fact that Laika is keeping that alive. And they recently, after the release of The Box Trolls, I think it was like a 3-picture deal that Focus signed with them to continue this partnership. So there's going to be more films from Laika. And all three of the films, I think, are winners. I love Coraline. I love Paranorman. I love The Box Trolls. This stuff is beautiful to watch. It's in 3D. It looks beautiful in 3D as well. So that's the top pick. There's also Lucy, which is, of course, the Scarlett Johansson film, in which she plays a woman who gets a drug that unlocks the full potential of her mind. And she just turns into her butt-kicking superhero. She basically turns into Black Widow, who's also a genius. And you know what's funny? This movie was lambasted by some critics because they said, oh, it's dumb, and it's just basal, and it's just about violence and kicking butt. I'm like, yeah, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. This was a year for Scarlett Johansson. I generally don't like her. I mean, she's pretty, sure. I'll look at her naked. But I've never been a big fan, but I think the 2014 was a fantastic year. Not only did she get to do the Black Widow character in the Captain America sequel, but she was also in Lucy, and then she was also in Under the Skin, one of my favorite movies of 2014. So this has been a neat year for her. Lucy's worth checking out. If you didn't see it in the theaters, check it out. It did well, but I mean, I still think that there's plenty of people that need to see this movie. Another one is Annabelle, which is the prequel to The Conjuring. This is a neat movie. I mean, it's not as good as The Conjuring, but what I like about it is it uses James Wan's slow burn throwback 70s horror style that he did in Insidious. And they use that style to make a horror film. And in this one, it's the story of Annabelle, the creepy doll, and how it came to be possessed. This film works because it takes its time. It's not a shaky cam, found footage movie. It goes back to an older style of filmmaking, which is very effective. It uses sound and shadow. And like I said, it's not as effective as Insidious. It's not as effective as The Conjuring. And it's very different from The Conjuring. Like I said, it feels more like an Insidious type movie, which are both directed by James Wan. This one's, he just produces it. But I enjoyed it. I thought Annabelle was a neat movie. It's good for some scares. And it came out in October, which is always a good thing. There's also The Zero Theorem, which was an interesting Terry Gilliam movie. It's not as brilliant as Brazil was, but it's that dystopian future, and it's out there. And again, really out of the box. This entire week is out of the box when it comes to the DVDs. There's also The Drop, which is one of James Gandolfini's final films. Stars him and Tom Hardy as the people who work in a bar that is a drop point for the mob. The Stinker of the Week is Wolves, which isn't a terrible movie, but it's like the worst of the bunch. And simply because, as cool as it is to see a werewolf movie, it's more in line with Teen Wolf than it really is with a real sincere werewolf movie. That's it. I'm done for the week. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Black or White with Kevin Costner, Project Almanac, The Loft, and Black Sea. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.